Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale. Coming up next on the Wet Fly Swing Podcast.
Blunk. You know, we always, it's sort of like the funny term, we're looking for the perfect fly that makes that perfect blunk, that, you know, the fish, they hear it underwater, they come, you know, as fast as they can come up, they can find it. And machaca, I mean, they're incredibly fast fish. So usually it's that fly hits the water and within a second you have three or four machaca just headbutting it, fighting over it, tail slapping it. It's wild. And then, you know, hopefully you get another cast or two in there before you hook up.
That was Tom Enderlin describing how to entice machaca, the jungle roosters, and tarpon today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the show. Did you know you can follow the show right now if you're using Apple Podcasts? Real easy way, if you haven't followed the show, you'll get updated when that next episode goes live, and we've got them going live. We're trying to get these going live at least a couple times a week, if not more, so click that follow button, you'll get updated soon. Today's episode is sponsored by Stonefly Nets, putting quality before quantity with their handcrafted custom wood landing nets. When Ethan designs your net, it's his hope and goal to help you create lasting memories for years to come. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/stonefly right now. That's STONEFLY to support this podcast and a really great company. We're also sponsored by Trestle today, designing, engineering, and manufacturing industry-leading outdoor products and premium apparel. They've got a lot of good stuff going. They've got the telescopic fly rod. They've got specialized waterproof cases, boxes, nippers. They got the bike stuff going on now. You can check it all out right now. Wetflyswing.com/trestle. That's TRXSTLE. You support this podcast and Trestle by clicking through that link. Tom Enderlin is here to take us into the diversity of fishing Costa Rica. We find out which species they focus on and some tips on targeting those species. Find out whether monkeys are something to get fired up about. We have a little conversation there about what happens when a monkey comes into your room. And we also talk about these fruit-eating fish that you catch on this crazy fly. This one seems pretty doable, Costa Rica. So without further ado, here he is, Tom Enderlin. How's it going, Tom?
It's going great, Dave. Thanks so much for having me. I've been a fan of the show for a long time, so it's wonderful to be here talking to you today.
Amazing. Yeah, I appreciate that. It's always cool to hear. Sometimes I'll do shout-outs on an episode a lot of times at the end to see who's listening, and I'll say, hey, give a shout-out on social media. Send me a DM, you know, and I'll forget that I do that, and then I'll get these DMs from, in, you know what I mean, from people that are like, oh yeah, just found the show 2 days ago. You know what I mean? It's the podcasting space is cool because it's still growing, you know, probably like a good business, right? You got a lot of room for growth ahead of you. But we're going to talk about some on your business. Costa Rica is one of those places where, you know, I want to get to, and I think probably a lot of people would love to get. We're going to break that down and dig into some of those crazy species out there. But before we get there, talk about how you first got into fly fishing, then we'll take it into Costa Rica.
First got into fly fishing. I started fishing when I was really young. Really nobody other than my mom's dad, who's Swiss. My grandfather is into fishing. So it was one of those things that for some weird reason I was just drawn to. As a little boy, I always had a net, and then I progressed into having a rod. And I actually didn't start fly fishing until I was in college. I went to school in Rhode Island, where there was amazing, pretty good trout fishing, but amazing striped bass fishing. So just drawn to the ocean, drawn to those opportunities, and just being interested in what fly fishing is, you know, looking at the natural world in a different way, trying to analyze whatever that species that you're chasing is eating, making the flies. It really called to me, and I picked it up, and it's been sort of 100% ever since.
So you've been going, and you, so from Rhode Island, so take us there. So you're Rhode Island doing the striped bass thing. How do you come to where you're now, like the Costa Rica, and with your travel company, you're all over, right? All over the world.
Yeah, no, all over Latin America for sure. But, so Rhode Island, besides fishing, I did a lot of surfing, and obviously Costa Rica has amazing surfing, world-class. So since the age of about 15, I always came down to Costa Rica, did surf trips, and it was one of those places that also just, you know, called to me, brought me in. Pretty much every year I was down here. And then when I graduated from college, I really didn't have too much direction. I was a philosophy and marine biology major. So, you know, it's one of those things, if you want to be a beach bum, it's perfect. It's a perfect background. But otherwise, I was sort of lost and looking. And I got an opportunity to come down here and work for a big coffee company as an intern. And that internship, it was meant to be 3 months. I basically finished the work after about a month. And I talked to the owner, and I just said, what else can I do? And he got me involved in tourism. And I ended up spending 2.5 years here in Costa Rica and just learning everything about the tourism market. Really nothing fishing related, but everything else. And then from there, I left again. I went to Europe. I worked actually as a commodities trader, as a coffee trader. And then I joined a conservation organization called the Rainforest Alliance, and I worked with them in their tourism program for a number of years. But as sort of luck would have it, I met my wife, who's Costa Rican. And then I moved back down to Costa Rica and just, you know, wanted to combine all my passions. That's where Fly Fishing Costa Rica was born and the outfitter that I have now.
Oh, wow. There it is. And you were... And during all that time when you're doing the coffee and Rainforest Alliance, were you also doing a little bit of fly fishing for some of those species down there?
Oh, well, not so much Costa Rica, but when I was a coffee trader, I was actually living in London, England. And I joined a club called the Fly Fishers Club, London Fly Fishers Club. And that gave me amazing opportunities to fish all those chalk streams over there and sort of all over Europe. I did a lot of traveling, so I was extended by a day or two and fished the different rivers and places they can fish in that part of the world. And yeah, obviously when I came back here, I just started just diving on everything that Costa Rica is and all the cool species that can be caught here. And yeah, it's a wonderful country to just sort of travel around with a fly rod.
Yeah. And what is, I was thinking about this, you know, the Costa Rica, what makes it unique? Cause we talked kind of off air about Ecuador. We had an episode 242 or a friend of mine, we dug into Ecuador, and it's really, he's down in the jungle. It's kind of cool and crazy. But talk about Costa Rica. Is it a lot different than some of the other kind of Central American, Latin American place? Because it's kind of, is it not Americanized, or how do you describe that?
It's maybe a little bit Americanized because there are so many expats that live here. But I would say that the main difference that Costa Rica has over all the Central American neighbors is it's just so peaceful and happy. I mean, it consistently is in the world happiness or planet happiness index is one of the happiest countries in the world. And then also in terms of just peaceful people, peaceful government, Costa Rica abolished their national army in 1949. So we haven't had an army for years. And I think that whole way of life and that way of thinking towards your neighbor and your fellow man has really been ingrained in the culture. Costa Rica's national motto is Pura Vida, which is pure life. So I think just everything combined, it's just a happy, friendly place. I mean, the Ticos are very upbeat and fun and friendly people. And I think that's sort of the one thing that makes Costa Rica so different from some of the neighbors. It's just a very unique place in that sense.
Wow. Wow. That is, I mean, especially at this day, well, just the world, but at this day and age, you know what I mean? Like with everything that's going on. You know what I mean? There's some countries like Costa Rica without an army is pretty amazing. Like that's just it's almost hard to comprehend, right? Knowing where if you're kind of U.S. based or whatever, you know, or even places around the world, right? Where you're like, oh my, all this war and stuff. But yeah,
for
so
sure.
That's it. So that one powerful thing is that Do you think that's the biggest thing that kind of Roy, that creates that whole mentality of kind of, like you said, the happiest place?
I mean, the happiest place, but I think also living in Costa Rica. I mean, Costa Rica is known for the biodiversity that it has here, and there's so many national parks, but then there are also so many beautiful beaches. And really, as you drive around Costa Rica, even just, I'm based here in the Central Valley, which is where the capital San Jose is. And that's really where most people fly into when they come to Costa Rica. Even driving around here, I mean, you look up into the mountains, it's surrounded in volcanoes. They're just right now during the rainy season, crazy cloud formations every day, great sunsets. And I think the whole country is just, it's one of those places that you're in awe just by living here. You know, and then besides that, great fruit, great food, you know, just a nice place to live. And I think that people really embrace that, and it shows in the way they live their lives.
There you go. And you mentioned the coffee too. If we have time at the end, we might dig into the coffee. A quick shout out to Angler's Coffee, who is creating some good coffee too. I love the story. I mean, coffee's huge, right? So it's a gigantic industry, but maybe we'll save that for a little bit later. But let's get into a little bit of the Costa Rica kind of species and a kind of a year in review sort of thing. And if you imagine, you know, let's just start with, maybe it's like mid-July into August, and we'll kind of take it around the horn a little bit. And you've got a lot of species, obviously. There's a bunch of amazing species, but let's start with the timing. What's going on if you just start out like right now? What are you guys up to now over there?
So right now we're preparing. This is the start of our rainy season. So all the rivers get flooded. Basically, the entire country has rain every day or every afternoon. And really what we're getting into right now is our main program at this time of year, which is the Jungle Tarpon Reserve. It's an area where tarpon, adult tarpon, migrate up a river about 250 kilometers. So they're in completely fresh water. It's a sort of flooded delta where there are lagoons, there's river, and they just go up there to feed. I mean, it's just an amazing ecosystem surrounded in pristine rainforest. I mean, it's one of those places that, you know, you first look at it and you're like, there's no way a tarpon is here. And then all of a sudden, you know, one blasts bait underneath the tree or one rolls right in front of you.
Wow. These are big tarpon?
These are, I mean, they range. We've had some biologists come down and look at them, and they're just amazed because we have from 20 pounders up to well over 200 pound fish. So it's the full range. And we had a couple of biologists come down and just, they couldn't believe that the small ones were also migrating with the big ones. But it's the type of place that during the dry season, the river's completely dry and has no tarpon. So it's definitely a migration. It's a very unique place. And then besides the tarpon, I mean, there are monkeys everywhere. There are birds. It's one of those places that you hook a tarp and all of a sudden the howler monkeys just go nuts, you know, up in a tree above you, and parrots are flying around. I mean, it's an amazing, amazing place to fish.
Jeez, that's it. So, and you're saying, so basically now, you know, you're kind of in the June, so into July, August. So, and when does the rainy season, when does that slow down?
The rainy season slows down in November. And then we have our dry season from December until about April. And that time of year, it's great fishing in some of the rivers. That's when things dry out. So we can fish machaca, which is our fruit and flower eating fish. It's related to piranha. So imagine a fish that looks a little bit like a shad. It's a little bit more colorful. And then its mouth is just filled with these piranha teeth. And they're 100% vegetarian. So they find the fruiting trees or the flowering trees, and they just concentrate underneath those trees. And we fish those fish with drift boats. So you float down a river, jungle river, same type of thing, just incredible ecosystem to look at. And you're looking for these fruit trees. Your guide points one out. Okay, here comes one up, you know, river left, cast your fruit fly or whatever you're fishing with underneath that thing. And boom, you know, the entire school of machaca just explode on that. So that's one of the fish that we fish in the summer. We have up in the highlands, and this is an introduced species, but they've become wild and they're just incredible to catch as well. Rainbow trout. It's kind of available year round, but during the summer, that's when the river gets really nice and low and clear. And, it's just little pocket water streams, surrounded in cloud forests, an amazing place to fish as well. And then that time of year also has pretty good inshore and offshore fishing in the Pacific. So inshore snapper, rooster fish, jacks, those types of species. And then if you go a little bit more offshore, that's sailfish season.
Selfish. God, that's so you got it all. So you got, and I was just looking back, we've kind of touched on a little bit of all these species for the most part, you know, in different parts of the world, really. But we did have the, we did do a kind of a sailfish. I mean, that's a whole different world, right? That's like talking about that. So we're going to kind of take this one and see where we go. And we might dig into a species, you know, as we go here. But just for you, when you think about it, what is, you know, I mean, obviously you might have, you do it all, so it's maybe hard to tell. But if you had to pick one species, what's the one that, you know, you're most interested in?
I mean, there are just so many amazing fish to catch here. And they're major bucket list fish, you know, tarpon and blue marlin and sailfish and roosterfish.
Yeah.
And I've caught all those and they're all incredible. But I think that the one fish, and it's kind of funny, but it's the one fish, if I had to choose from all of them, it's fishing a fish called the Tipimichin or the mountain mullet.
Hmm.
And we fish that in our dry season. It's, imagine like a small prehistoric looking mullet. I mean, its scales are a little bit like the fall fish, I guess. And we fish them with skated little poppers and hoppers. And they're just, you know, for a 6-inch fish, for a 10-inch fish, they are the most powerful little things. They live in the fastest parts of of these freestone streams. And they're just a blast to catch. I mean, they're so much fun. Light rods, summertime, so the rivers are crystal clear. I mean, it's an unusual one to pick out of all of them, but that's the one that we're currently fixated on.
Gotcha. And you mentioned roosters and all that stuff, which is another popular. What do you think is about when people come up to you? Tarpon obviously is huge, but when they call you or they sign up a form and you're talking to them, what do you think they're thinking? Like, what's the species they're thinking about?
I mean, it really depends, because a lot of people, they come down here with their families, they come down here with their spouses, with their kids, and they want to do day trips. So I for the day trips, one of the greatest things you can fish is machaca. It's a great thing if you've never fly fished. They're very forgiving. Obviously, if they're waiting for fruit to fall out of a tree, your presentation doesn't have to be perfect. So that's one of the ones that, you know, if they just want to fish a day, it's machaca. Maybe rainbow trout, it's a little bit more sort of known from home. And then if people want to do multi-days, it depends on what time of year. I think that the ocean fishing in the Pacific is amazing pretty much all year. But, you know, obviously they're the highlights for sailfish. Marlin fishing way offshore is incredible from May until, I guess, November. And then obviously tarpon fishing. I mean, we have our fall tarpon season when, whether it's the river or the ocean, I mean, there are famous rivers like the Colorado, like the Tortuguero. Those rivers are just incredible. I mean, they have probably some of the highest concentrations of big tarpon in the world. I mean, it's just, it's mind boggling some days when you're out there seeing the number of tarpon that you see eating or rolling. So it really depends on what they're looking for, their experience level. And I think Costa Rica really has a little bit for everybody.
Yeah, it seems like it would be hard to choose, but I guess I'm just kind of thinking out loud. I think, you know, the jungle seems like, you know, that would be one place, because then you're up there and you're actually seeing some monkeys and you're seeing the, you know, I know you've seen some jaguars out there and stuff, so you've got all that. If you were, let's just take it to that, let's just say we're looking at December, you know, that winter, or December through January through April, your dry season, which is a lot of times the, you know, up here, the colder season. So what would be, is it machaca?
Machaca.
Machaca. Yeah, machaca. Yeah. If you're going for that species, what would be the, you know, the best time to hit those up?
Well, we have two different types of machaca in Costa Rica. We have one that lives in the Caribbean basin and one that lives in the Pacific. So I would say, you know, you really have to look more at what's in fruit or what's in flower at that time of year. So really March, April for a certain type of tree called the espavel, which is the wild cashew. That's the time you want to fish them in the Pacific. They really focus in on that particular tree. There are a lot of those types of trees in some of the rivers that we fish. So it's really just, you know, it's bouncing down the river from tree to tree, catching machaca that are just ready to eat. That's all they want to do. And then in terms of the Caribbean basin, we have the same thing going with a fish or with a fruit called chilamate. And they're starting to come into harvest right now. And that lasts until probably, I'd say, early October. So and really what's amazing is that Costa Rica is so small. It's mega diverse. I mean, there's a lot going on, but it's really small and easy to get around. So you can be in San Jose and you can shoot down to the Caribbean for a day. You can shoot down to the Pacific for a day. So sorry, I keep on sort of like expanding or avoiding your questions, but but really it's one of those things that Costa Rica has just so much going on that any time of year can be good, and any time of year can,
right.
You can find that corner of the country that maybe has a little bit of a little bit of a dry period, because that's the other thing. There are a lot of different ecosystems, and there are a lot of different microclimates that you can target depending on the time of year.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's, and it's hard because there's just so much going on. It's, if it's not just one species you guys have throughout the whole year, it sounds like you can find some, whether that's up in the mountains, like you're saying, for rainbow trout. So in the time when it's rainy and crazy, like maybe lower down, you got, or let's see, is that right? So rainbow, let's just take it to the rainbow really quick. When is that time? When would be the one time if you had a few weeks to hit?
The rainbow trout all year, but I would say probably during our dry season is the best time to go. I mean, the rivers are crystal clear, really low. You're not going to get rained out in the afternoons. And the rainbows, I mean, they're wild, they're beautiful, full of par marks. I mean, they're just really incredible fish. And they've actually oddly evolved these really big eyes. They almost have like froggy eyes. And I don't know if it's just the characteristics of the rivers that they live in. I mean, they're really clear. Maybe it's just that they don't have that much food, so they really have to be opportunistic when they actually find some. But they're incredible fish. And so I would say rainbow trout fishing probably during our dry season. One of the things that also is a lot of fun during our dry season is trying to just focus on diversity. And I think that those are our most enjoyable trips for everybody, where instead of focusing on just rainbows or just machaca, you do a trip that you go around the country, you do a couple days of saltwater, a couple days of cloud forests and rainbows, then you shoot down to the lowland rivers and target machaca.
Now you're talking.
Oh, for sure. And the Costa Rica Grand Slam is actually a tarpon, a trout, and a billfish.
Oh, wow.
So that's a great trip. I mean, it's a lot of fun. You can only do it certain times a year, but at the same time, it's just one of those fly fishing odysseys that you do a little bit of everything. I mean, every species that you're targeting is so different, but at the same time, you're within a relatively small geographic range, so it's all accessible within a week.
So the Grand Slam, and remind me again, what is the Grand Slam? What species?
It's a tarpon in the Caribbean, a rainbow trout up in the cloud forest, and a billfish, so a sailfish or a marlin in the Pacific.
Right, gotcha. So you're going to get some jungle action on that.
Oh, for sure. And see so many parts of the country as you go. You know, you drive through the mountains, you drive all over the place, and you encounter a lot of great people and a lot of great food, and you see a lot of amazing wildlife. So it's just one of those amazing trips that definitely one of the once in a lifetime things that people should do.
This episode is sponsored by Lake Lady Rods, a distinctive custom rod, each created one at a time. Custom built to be the exact specifications for you. This is all based on a little formula that Chris has going, where he kind of measures your body features and puts it all together. I recently had the rod that Chris crafted for me and designed it specifically, and I can tell you it was definitely nice to have on the water. Was casting some steel water flies, and I was shooting a ton of line with that 4-weight. It's a 9-foot 4-weight, but it was also cool just to kind of have the beautiful, always looking at it, you know what I mean? You got that rod. That's the bonus of having a cool custom rod is when you're not catching fish, you're sitting there checking out the handle, checking out the jungle cock inlays, all the good stuff Chris has going. So we'd love it if you can support Chris, a local company, doing great things. He's doing these things one at a time. He also restores and builds bamboo rods, does conventional gear. He's got a little bit of everything going on. So check it out right now. That's wetflyswing.com/lakelady. LakeLady to support this podcast and a really great rod company. Okay, so, and I keep going back to the wintertime, our wintertime, because that's always a good time to get out. So if you were just picking a period, just say it's we're looking at like the December, January, February, somewhere in there. Let's just say it's January. So what would that trip look like if we were setting up right now something for January? Talk about that a little bit. How would we set up? What do we do here?
I mean, for me, I always lean towards diversity unless people are really focused on one thing. Our rainy season, kind of the only thing other than marlin way offshore in the Pacific is tarpon. So that's why we have longer tarpon programs. But if we were looking at January, I would say just looking at diversity, I mean, maybe doing a couple days of machaca floats, a couple days of saltwater, so whether it's inshore for roosters or offshore for sailfish, and then shooting up to the cloud forest and doing some wet wading and catching some rainbows.
That's it, and doing the rainbows. And that would all be, so if we were to say, you know, we had an open time in January to say, you know, we're going to come up there for a week. Is that typically what most people do, or come up for about a week?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things that you end up, I mean, if you come in on Saturday, you leave on Sunday, you fish every environment probably 2 days. You definitely have enough time to fish everything. It's easy to get around, so it's not that you have to take flights internally or anything like that.
All right.
You know, you drive in the afternoons or you drive in the evenings, and you have plenty of time to fish and explore.
And are you guys doing this thing? Is this a thing where we're going to like a lodge, or how's that look?
Yeah, mainly lodges. I mean, we have some areas that we work a little bit more with communities, but it's mainly lodges, taking you to lodges that we've worked with for a long time that are fly fisherman friendly, or, you know, well located right near the beach or right near the river.
Yeah. So that's it. So if you came in, and again, setting up this trip, so we're going to, you know, fly into, basically like the, like you said, the city that you're in there.
Yep. And then San Jose.
San Jose. And then you're going to basically what, just drive out from there or take it that. So let's put the trip together real quick here. Let's just say we're flying into San Jose on Saturday and we're there. What's the next step?
Well, I mean, people are coming from the wintertime. Normally they're coming from the Northern Hemisphere. So usually the first thing that we focus on is rainbow trout. It's just, you know, it's not getting right down into the tropical lowlands. It's sort of an easy intro. And it's something that people are familiar with. So from San Jose, those streams, those rivers are about 2.5 hours. So it's easy to get to. Fish there for a couple of days. Then you shoot down to the coast. You can either do machaca then if you want to do the float trips. We have rivers available sort of all over the Pacific area. And then going offshore, inshore, and catching some of the bigger saltwater species. So it's sort of a loop that you do, starting the mountains. San Jose is also in the mountains, so it's mountains down to the coast, and then you come back up to the mountains and fly home.
Yeah, right. So, and let me get this right. So we were starting in the rainbow, and then the machaca is the float trip. How does that? So drift boats, and why are you guys using these? Are drift boats like your typical, like you'd see up in the States?
No, we're using. Similar, but they're not wooden drift boats or fiberglass. They're basically whitewater rafts with fishing frames, and you just float down the river. I mean, it's sort of similar to streamer fishing, I guess, where you just, you know, you're throwing pretty heavy floating lines and pretty heavy fruit flies. We make a lot of our flies either out of wood or out of cork, painted green, and you just, you know, a really short leader, just trying to pluck plunk. You know, we always, it's sort of like the funny term, we're looking for the perfect fly that makes that perfect blunk, that blunk. You know, the fish, they hear it underwater, they come, you know, as fast as they can come up, they can find it. And machaca, I mean, they're incredibly fast fish. So usually it's that fly hits the water and within a second you have three or four machaca just headbutting it, fighting over it, tail slapping it. It's wild. And then, you know, hopefully you get another cast or two in there before you hook up.
Right. And what's the fight like when they hit it?
They're very hard fighting. The rivers have a lot of current, so, you know, they have broad, big heads. They dig into the current a little bit. They jump. I mean, they'll use every dirty trick they can. If they find a log, they try to get into it. And but they're, I mean, it's one of those fish. It's almost so ugly that its ugliness makes it beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, the big teeth and the big eye, and they're sort of like a, you know, a combined green and red and silver, and then they have a lot of different colors going on throughout their body, depending on the river, of course. I mean, some are a little bit more silvery, some are a little bit more colored. But yeah, they're truly a special fish, and machaca, you know, Costa Rica, that's sort of our, I don't want to say our national freshwater fish, but it's one of the fish that is very unique to this part of the world. So we're definitely very proud of the machaca, and we like to share it with people.
Yeah, no, it sounds awesome. And how big do they get? They're just like a couple pounds?
No, I mean, a big machaca, a really nice machaca. You know, they started around 5 pounds, but grew up to 10 pounds. And then you hear stories of locals talking about even bigger, a random photo of some friend of a friend who caught one that was 12 pounds or 15 pounds. But typically what you can expect is anywhere from sort of 2 pounds to maybe 5 or 6 pounds, depending on the river.
2 pounds, but yeah, that's pretty good. So, and what's the gear looking like? Just taking in general Costa Rica, what sort of rods should you be bringing in lines?
So I guess if we're going to follow that trip, starting up in the cloud forest, you would start light. So, rods, traditional fly rods up to 3, or 10 car, depending on what you like. Then shooting down to machaca, you'd fish anywhere from a 6 to an 8 weight with a floating line. And then saltwater, if you're fishing roosters, it's 10, it's 11. If you go a little bit more offshore for the billfish, I mean, depending on whether or not you're chasing sailfish or marlin, I mean, for marlin, up to 16 weights. For sailfish, you can go 12 to 14.
Yeah.
But a lot of that stuff, I mean, we have a lot of the gear, so a lot of times people just show up with nothing other than just a willingness to explore and go out and have an adventure, and we provide a lot of that tackle. So, I mean, that's another way to sort of do that trip without having to invest in a whole bunch of different rods and reels and lines and everything.
There you go. Yeah, and I was just looking back at the episode. It was Jake Jordan was talking about the billfish, and he was talking about that on the gear too, because I guess, right, it can really thrash your gear.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and yeah, it's so specialized too that,
yeah,
you know, it's one of those rods that unless you're really into that type of fishing, you may only use it once in your lifetime. So
yeah, exactly. So it's the, like you said, three weight or a 6 to maybe a 7 weight, maybe bring up like a 3 weight and a 7 weight, and then you'd be covered for most of the jungle stuff.
For sure. And some of the smaller species, the Tepemechin, some of the cichlids that we catch in the lowland river wet wading, that's also 3 weight. So it's basically like, you know, the equivalent of trout fishing, but in a tropical environment.
Yeah, that's right. And did you guys have some film? I thought I saw a film on machaca out there.
Yeah, yeah, that was our film. That was in the 2020 F3T.
Yeah.
It's called Machaca, Botanical Tale. That's now on our Vimeo and sort of all over the place. It's free. So if you look for that, if you Google Machaca, Botanical Tale, I'm sure it'll come up. And yeah, that gives you a definite idea of what the machaca is. We really, for that film, we tried to focus on the fish instead of the angler. Uh-huh. And really do sort of a little bit more life cycle on the fish. We actually, as we started doing the film, we wanted to have a David Attenborough type voice as the narrator.
Uh-huh.
And in the end, we chose against it. But at the same time, if you watch it, it's definitely a little bit of a Planet Earth mixed with a fly fishing film.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, and I love Planet Earth. Was amazing. I remember when that came out at the time, that was like a game changer.
For sure. All those series are amazing.
Nice. So, okay. So we got the trip. We're kind of putting this together here. We're starting out, like you said, on Saturday, heading up. And then, so after that, you start out with Rainbow up in the mountains, up in the cloud forest. Where are we coming back to? What's that look like at night? What, you're coming back to a place up in the mountains?
It's very cold at night. It's a cloud forest environment. I mean, cold for Costa Rica. I shouldn't say cold, because people are flying in from the Rockies, I mean, that's real cold. Yeah. But it gets down to sort of like low 50s at night. It's very quaint and beautiful, this valley. There are a lot of orchards with different fruit trees, northern fruit trees like apricots or apples. And then a lot of the lodging, I mean, there are a lot of different cabinas and things like that have a fireplace. I mean, it's a fun place to be. And then the other draw to that area, it's a major bird watching hub. And there's a bird that lives there. It's called the resplendent quetzal. And imagine sort of a crow-sized bird with a 4-foot green tail, and the whole thing is sort of green and red in the body. I mean, it's just an impressive bird to see, and a lot of times at that time of year we see them when we're fishing. So it's that's another sort of amazing little thing about Costa Rica. Really, everywhere you go, you have the opportunity to see incredible wildlife, whether it's birds or monkeys. In our jungle tarpon reserve area, I mean, we have a major jaguar camera trap study going on. And at any given time, I mean, if someone wants to see a jaguar track, I definitely can't guarantee a jaguar, but jaguar tracks are super easy to find. We have lots of jags in that area. So it's a cool place to fish, because you never know what's going to pop out.
Right. Yeah, that's the cool thing. The cats are amazing because it's just like out, you know, up here, right, with cougars. I mean, they're all over the place, but yep. you don't ever see them, right? You might be lucky to see one in your lifetime, but they're out there. They're just very stealthy.
They see you, but they won't let you see them. It's exactly. Almost one of those things where the spirit of the animal allows you to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. You ever get that? Yeah. That feeling, right? You probably get it all the time where you're walking through the jungle. You're like, man, it feels like something big is looking at me, right? Is watching me.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm in there most days during the week. I mean, we have about 20 camera traps. So I constantly have to go in and just check cards and whatever else. And there are definitely moments early in the morning, late in the evening, where the hair on the back of your neck stands up and it's like, okay, is someone here with me or something here with me?
Yeah. And what is the camera? So what are you doing with the cameras there? Describe that.
It's a study that we have with the national park. It's basically just trying to review general biodiversity. I mean, obviously focused on jaguars. I'm a little bit obsessed, as I'm sure most of my clients can vouch for. But we're just trying to figure out what the biodiversity numbers of terrestrial mammals are in that area. So we have all kinds of things. I mean, we have, you know, starting small, different types of opossums. We have, you know, different types of smaller porcupines, different things, raccoons, and then another, something like a raccoon, a guatemundi, which is, imagine a raccoon with a really long sort of striped tail. Mm. And then we have anteaters, we have, you know, different herbivores, and then a couple different types of cats. And some of those cats, I mean, there's one big male, he's on the camera traps almost every day, and then a couple females in his territory. I mean, it's pretty special. Also ocelots, pumas.
Oh, right.
So the whole range of rainforest species.
That's right. And of course the monkeys is always like the X factor, right? You've got the monkeys would be that's the one thing. That's the species talk about that a little bit. How many is that, pretty diverse as far as the different species up there?
In that area, I mean, Costa Rica has four different ones. In that area, we have three different ones. And that's sort of the other fun thing that we do every day. We try to get the monkey grand slam. So we look for all three species, and a lot of times you'll get two, but then you're missing one. Let's say the howler monkey, and you can hear it in the distance. Like, okay, where's that howler? Where's that howler? But yeah, we have a white-faced capuchins, that's the smallest monkey, definitely the sort of the most aggressive, the most sort of like clever and slightly evil.
Right.
Then we have the howler monkey. They're vegetarian, so they're a little bit more lethargic. Their sound is incredible, but besides that, they sleep for most of the day. And then you have the spider monkey, which is, you know, long limbs, long tail. They swing through the trees. I think it's the second fastest monkey. I think the gibbon is number one. And then the spider monkey, the way they move through the trees, is number two in terms of speed.
Oh, wow.
And you'll see in that area, especially, you'll see, I mean, countless monkeys every day. It's one of those things. I fish all over the world in different jungle environments, and you always look into the trees and it's like, where are the monkeys here? And then you realize how special it is back here in Costa Rica.
Oh, wow.
One of the special parts of Costa Rica, when you're, you know, early in the morning, sort of 5 o'clock, you know, you have to get on the boat at 5:30 or whatever time, and you start to stir in bed, and all of a sudden you hear the howler monkeys just way off in the distance, and then a little bit closer. And so there are tons of monkeys, and yeah, it's a very high likelihood that you will see them traveling around Costa Rica.
And on the monkeys, is this one of those things where you're sleeping there and you wake up in the middle of the night and there's a monkey sitting on the end of your bed screwing with you?
No, not quite like that. These guys, they respect boundaries a little bit more. So they keep to their trees as long as you keep to your bed.
That's like the worst nightmare is to wake up and have a monkey messing with you, right? Because they're pretty intelligent.
Oh yeah, they're pretty intelligent. They're
What is something you see out there? What's something you see just daily when you see these monkeys that you're like, oh, wow, that thing is, I mean, it's just, you know, it's not your normal, you know, animal, mammal you see out there.
Besides the monkeys?
No, like when you see these monkeys, what are they doing that just makes them so kind of more, you know what I mean? I mean, they're obviously human-like, right? But what's something you see on a daily basis that they're doing that's just kind of blows you away?
I mean, the howlers, they're usually up in the trees and they call, and that's impressive on its own. The spider monkeys, they're just so agile, but I the ones that, I mean, they definitely are, you look at them and you can just see their personalities. You can see they're a little bit conniving. And if they could get down to the boat and steal, you know, a drink out of your cooler, they would. That's the white-faced capuchins. And I mean, you look in all their faces, they all have different looks. They, you know, they'll stare at you and the eyebrows start going up and down. And I mean, it's a very funny monkey because, you know, there's a lot going on upstairs.
Yeah. I always go back to, we had this episode on with Lewis Cahill from Geek and Gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells this story about, and I can't remember the monkeys. I guess they were bigger or whatever, but they were doing some photo shoot with like the few monkeys, like in a controlled environment. But he tells this story of these, you could see it in the video because they recorded it all, but they schemed as a group. And they're a real aggressive type of monkey. And anyways, within a second, one of the monkeys distracted the camera person or the person in charge, and they jumped across the room and like literally almost ripped his arm off.
Wow.
Yeah, and they attacked him, and it was like they were trying to kill him. It was like, you could see in the video, you could see how they were like looking at each other like, okay, ready, go. And they like distracted everybody, and they tried to kill Lewis. And it was like this story. So you just realize like, man, these are smart animals, but they're also very, they can be dangerous, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Luckily, the Costa Rican monkeys are as peaceful as the Costa Rican people. So,
all right.
Yeah, there's no threat of getting attacked by monkeys, but they'll come down, they'll look at you and sort of try to figure out what you are and what you're doing in their environment.
Right. This is awesome. Okay, so we're painting the picture a little bit. I want to go through just a quick little, you know, a little day here. So you mentioned 5:30. So if we're getting up, hitting for the Machaca, and so you're getting up early. Are you getting up early for those guys as well because you're doing the boat thing?
You're doing the float trip. So I mean, it's really best early in the morning or late in the evening. The float trips, depending on the river, they range from sort of 5 to 7 hours.
Okay.
So I mean, if you start early, you end up, you know, finishing your day around lunchtime, or you can do lunch on the river and then float into the evening. But yeah, the extremes of the day is when they tend to be the most active. And you float all day. Sometimes we stop and we'll have some fruit on a beach or a swim. I mean, the rivers are so incredible for swimming as well. So that's a good way to escape the heat for a couple minutes and cool off and get ready to keep casting.
Right. So there's no problem jumping in the water. It's all good there.
I mean, there are crocs, but the crocs I don't think have any interest in eating people. I think that they're really focused on fish. So.
They're friendly too. They're all happy.
They're peaceful crocs. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Nice. This is good. Okay. So basically you got the float trip and you're kind of waking up early, hitting that on the river all day, and then you wrap that up. And like you're saying, if this was a trip where you're doing a week or 10 days, you'd be kind of spending a couple days maybe in each of those spots. So you'd have maybe a couple nights sort of thing
at
one location.
A couple nights in each location. And then depending on how you want to do sailfish or marlin, we actually go anywhere from 40 to 120 miles offshore. We have these seamounts out there that are just incredible for fly marlin, which they're still very, very big fish. I mean, ranging from 80 to 300 pounds, but definitely, you know, the modern fly rods up to 16 weight, they're capable of landing those fish. So that's sometimes sleeping on a sport fisher or just, you know, returning after sail fishing every day and finding some beautiful Costa Rican eco lodge and spending the night there.
Right. And then, like you said, if you wanted to, you could plan your trip. You could just say, I want to go for tarpon and just fish for tarpon the whole time. Is that true?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We do a lot of week long tarpon programs, whether that's in the ocean or in the river. I mean, we have our season coming up now, and luckily we've rebounded from the pandemic, and we're pretty much maxed out full for the season. So it's great for everybody. It's great for us guides. It's great for the locals that we work with. In that area, we do a lot of community engagement. So besides just training, we try to do lunches and breakfasts and dinners with a lot of different families just to make sure that all the people there have a little bit of skin in the game, that they're involved, that they're benefiting, and that they take conservation to heart.
And is that the conservation piece? Is that a big struggle out there? I mean, you hear these stories about some of those areas down in, you know, kind of Central America, wherever, you know, where they're hammering on the environment. Is there still a lot of issues there?
Luckily, Costa Rica is pretty eco-minded. And I think we get about 90% of our energy from renewables. So, I mean, it's definitely one of those countries that's incredibly focused on conservation and on eco. Unfortunately, just I think like everywhere else, sometimes resources for conservation are a little bit limited. So even though there is a national park, some national parks maybe don't get as much protection as they should. But still, I think all in all, we definitely have a country that's pretty focused on, you know, keeping the rivers healthy, keeping the ocean healthy, keeping the fish populations and all different animal populations. I mean, we don't allow hunting in Costa Rica, or the government doesn't allow hunting here. So it's one of those places that I think is definitely focused on keeping the nature that we have instead of maybe exploiting it.
Right. That's perfect. And that's where the Jungle Tarpon Reserve comes in. And that I've heard, I mean, obviously that's a pretty, that's a name you hear a lot of out there. They're doing some pretty good work. And are you guys, you know, how's that work? So that's, are you actually working with them doing some of their research?
Yeah. I mean, that's the area that we fish tarpon. That's our program. And the research that we're doing there, especially on the jaguars, all the different terrestrial mammals, I mean, that's something that we do because it abuts to a national park, a nationally protected area. So that's together with the national park office there. So they also can take some of our data and understand it and sort of focus their resources and what they have on the most important things that they need to be doing.
Yeah. And on the tarpon, there's a couple of different places you could fish. Do you recommend, is it, you know, is one, I guess, better than the other, you know, the jungle versus heading out further?
It's very different. I mean, the jungle fishing, it's a little bit more sight fishing. So you're finding fish that are either rolling in the lagoons and leading those with floating lines, or you're finding them eating the river. And you present your fly really a lot like a streamer. I mean, I get a lot of fishermen from Europe where they maybe don't have that much saltwater experience, but they fish salmon, they fish sea trout, and they understand it right away because it's just... it's something that they've done before, even though as soon as the tarpon eats, you know, they don't know the strip set and bow to the king and all those things. But
yeah,
but they do understand the technicalities of swinging a fly into a feeding fish. And then in terms of fishing the ocean, it's I mean, you can fish intermediate some days, but a lot of time it's sink tips. But I mean, it's one of those places that if you just want numbers, you can hook up to many, many fish from 60 to well over 100 pounds every day. So it's definitely one of those places that, you know, it's not Florida Keys style where you're seeing them coming in a chain and you're presenting to the lead fish or anything like that. But right. At the same time, in terms of numbers, in terms of opportunities to land fish. And then we do a program that's half and half. So we do half in the jungle river and then half in the ocean. So it gives you the opportunity to experience both fisheries.
Today's episode is sponsored by Bear Vault, keeping wild adventure going and ensuring your backcountry trip stays memorable, safe, and epic this year. Bear Vault builds a rugged polycarbonate locking canister that keeps bears and other critters out of your food. This is a clear canister. It has a wide opening so you can easily access your gear or your equipment, whatever you want to put in. We had an episode we did a while back, and we even have a guest that packed on the way out, packed his poop in the bear vault. So that's another thing you can do. I guess you got to have some plans there how to do it, but that's always part of the deal, right? In the backcountry, packing out your excrement. But believe it or not, food storage is a key consideration in the backcountry, whether hiking, fishing, or camping. Bear Vault, they do it all when it comes to food. They're leading the way. So check them out right now. That's wetflyswing.com/bearvault, BEARVAULT. And you will support this podcast by clicking through that link. Okay, back to the show.
Let's run down, just kind of rehash back through the species. So we talked about tarpon, which would be really cool. I mean, I could see, you know, just that a full trip on that. Like you said, split in half and half. We talked about the Menchaca, which are up there. We talked about the rainbows. And what was the mountain? What was the other one we talked about earlier on?
The mountain mullet. It's the Tepemechin.
Yeah, mountain mullet.
And that actually means fish from the wild in one of the indigenous languages, Tepemechin, fish from the wild. So it's just, very special little guy.
There you go. So you got that. And then we talked about some of the billfish and things going on out there. What else? What other species are we missing here that we haven't touched on?
There's the wolf cichlid or the rainbow bass.
Oh, yeah.
Known locally as the guapote. So that's a fish that the numbers aren't as high as they used to be. But at the same time, there's still rivers that have plenty of them. And that's an amazing fish. I mean, it's sort of as close to peacock bass as we get here. Greens and blues and purples, very, very beautiful fish. And, And those are fished similar to machaca, but using small poppers and small streamers. So some of the rivers you can fish both. You can fish machaca and you can fish guapote.
Gotcha. Maybe that'd be good to break down just as far as the jungle type species. Give us that little summary again, so we can organize this a little bit.
Okay, so the jungle freshwater, I guess it's machaca on both coasts, guapote on both coasts. The guapote is the rainbow bass. And then lesser species, you have the mountain mullet, which is the tepemechin. And then you have a couple other different types of cichlids and a fish that's called a moga, but really just like
all sorts of stuff.
Smallish tropical panfish. And then you have a grunt like fish called a roncador, which it's not really easy to target, but one of the rivers or a couple of the rivers on both coasts, they also have snook migrations that come up.
Hmm.
So at certain times of year, you can target snook in certain key spots. So fishing machaca, fishing guapote, and all of a sudden, throw a streamer and try to catch a couple small snook and then keep going and,
oh, nice.
And continue fishing whatever you're fishing for.
Right. How do you spell that? The roncular, roncarla?
Roncador. So it's R-O-N-C-A-D-O-R.
D-O-R, yeah, okay. D-O-R,
yeah, and they make that like grunt noise, kind of like a jack where you catch them and they kind of bark you a little bit.
Gotcha. So there's seven, and those are all, like you said, there's different, smaller species, but there's seven right there that are kind of, and you could add tarpon, I guess, right, to the jungle as well.
Tarpons definitely, they migrate into that freshwater ecosystem.
So you got that going, and so you got that, and then you've got all the stuff going out in the ocean, and we could add on the rooster fish, right, and some of the other, let's just go to the top. What are the big species people think about when they think more out there in the ocean?
I would say rooster fish, jacks, snapper, a couple different types of snapper. Obviously, yellowfin tuna is a big one. And recently, the government's been a little bit better about allowing international tuna boats coming in. So the tuna populations are definitely growing, especially a little bit closer to shore. And that's just a blast, finding giant schools with dolphins of yellowfin tuna ranging from, 20 to 50 pounds and trying to get one to eat a fly. I mean, they're so fast. It's very hard, but it's definitely doable. And then the billfish, the sailfish, the blue marlin, some black marlin inshore, that's a little bit more tricky, and then some stripes, but really blue marlin, sailfish, those are the two big boys.
There you go. Perfect. And I was just thinking fly-wise, rainbows, we didn't really dig into all that, but what are you using there? What's your selection look like for those fish?
I mean, it's pretty standard, beadhead nymphs, smaller generic dry flies, and then if you just want to kind of target them in the easiest possible way, or I guess the most effective possible way, it's hopper dropper.
Yeah.
You're getting a little bit of both.
Okay. And the tarpon reserve, I just want to touch on that really quick. So it sounds like there's some great things going on there protecting all the species, but if somebody wanted to dig into that a little bit, what would you recommend if they wanted to learn more about how they can kind of contribute or learn about it?
We have a lot of information on our website. So that's flyfishingcostarica.com. And then some of the studies that we're doing, they're not public yet, but hopefully they become public soon in terms of the JAG studies and whatever else. But if you look at our Instagram page and if you look online, we have some of those videos on there. So you can sort of experience what it's like when a jaguar walks past you at 3 feet, kind of looks you right in the eye.
Wow.
It's an amazing thing. I mean, obviously it's through the camera, but it's still, you can just see the power and, the muscles rippling underneath the spotted coat. They're pretty incredible.
And so are those videos out there online somewhere?
Yeah, we have them on our Instagram page, some of them. Still trying to figure out exactly how we're going to release the rest. I'm sure at some point we have lots to release. Last year we had actually two jaguars. They decided that our camera or in front of our camera was their lovemaking area. So they spent a week and a half there. Imagine this. The camera takes 15-second clips and edited together, I have a 20-second mini film on just them doing their thing in front of the camera. So wow. That's just in terms of something that maybe has never been filmed like that before, definitely not in Costa Rica or in Central America. It's pretty incredible. So a lot of those videos, I'm sure, will come out at some point.
Oh, wow.
And we'll share them with the world.
This is it. Yeah, we were talking about that off there. The planet Earth, you know, that was huge. And some of those people that did, when they did that, you know, they spent months sometimes camped out to get the right shot, right, sort of thing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Luckily, we don't have to spend that time in the elements. We can just put our cameras out there and they do the hard work for us.
Right. Right. That's good. Nice. Well, what else? We miss anything here? We've kind of given a general kind of brush over Costa Rica. Anything else you want, we'd like people to know about what you guys do up there and kind of, you know, why people would want to head out there?
I mean, I guess just stating the obvious that Costa Rica is just an amazing destination besides fly fishing for everything else, for beaching, for beaches, for ecotourism, lots of different, you know, opportunities for canopy and for whitewater rafting and then obviously bird watching, wildlife watching. It's one of those places that even if you're not 100% fly fishing, or if you want to do a trip that's a little bit more diverse, or if you want to travel with your family, it's definitely one of those destinations that it's easy to get to from pretty much the entire U.S., pretty much the entire world at this point. And it's just got lots of diversity. So, I mean, whether you want to just dive head on, do tarpon for a week and nothing else, and, you know, maybe once in a while get a quick monkey encounter, or if you want to do a little bit of everything, or bring your family and fish just for a day or two, or try to get your son or daughter involved in fly fishing. It's definitely, it's a destination that has a little bit for everybody.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen a couple of photos. I'm not sure if that was your kid, or I've seen some kids out there, right, getting into some fish. And you know, I think it was some machaca, right?
Yeah, I got the machaca. I'm waiting for the certificate, but I'll be releasing those photos. My five-year-old just got the small fry world record on machaca.
The small fry?
Small fry. He's 5 years old. We had him in the backyard training with his younger brother, three-year-old. So he was practicing casting. He was practicing fighting the fish. The three-year-old was pulling on the fly line. He was trying to control him. And then to get a world record, you obviously have to do everything by yourself. With fly fishing, you have to cast, you have to hook them, you have to fight them.
Yeah.
I couldn't touch him. I couldn't touch the rod. All I could do was net them. So it was definitely an accomplishment for him. It took an entire day to finally get one. And then in the afternoon we got a couple. So he was very, very excited. But
yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, if he can do it, anyone can do it.
That's it. No, I love it. And this is perfect. And the more you talk, you mentioned family. You know, I think that would be a cool way to do it, you know, where it seems like a place that you could take the family down just to say, hey, like we're saying, go in January, pick a day where it's going to be, you know, maybe a little bit colder and head down and then have the family, you know, hang out, fish, or just hang out. And is there a time, if you want to, you know, kind of get down with the family, when would you recommend? Is there a better time to do other things if it wasn't all fishing?
I mean, I would say definitely in our dry season, there are certain periods to maybe avoid if you can. Right at the end of December, Christmas, New Year's, that's a very, very busy time of year, so really expensive and usually booked well in advance. And then also Semana Santa, which is the Easter week, the Holy Week. That's another one where basically the entire country goes to the beach. All the Costa Ricans or the Ticos, so it's probably another period that you maybe want to avoid unless you don't mind a crowd.
Yeah.
But in terms of just family escaping the wintertime, I would definitely say any time from really December until April. It's a great time to be in Costa Rica. It doesn't rain. Beautiful beaches, beautiful rivers.
Yeah.
And lots of things going on.
So is the beach, you can get to the beach and do a, like, if you just wanted to do like the Hawaii type thing, right? Where you just sit on the beach for the whole time, you could do that and be loving it and swimming and doing all that.
Yeah. Costa Rica has, in my opinion, some of the best beaches in the world.
There you go. So you're drawing up the trip. So now we've talked a lot about fishing, but really coming back to this, you know, with the family, that makes it, you know, for some people it might make it even more doable, right? Because you can actually pitch and say, well, you know, this isn't just me going on another fishing trip. It's actually, we're doing the family thing and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Do you guys get more, you know, I'm sure it's more fishing, but what percentage of people coming up there are kind of doing the family thing and fishing?
I think that it used to be a little bit more just hardcore people, mainly because we focused on certain species, but now as we're opening it up to all different types of species, like trout, like machaca, we get a lot of people that are new to it, or, I mean, we love getting people that have never caught a tarpon and that's their mission for the week, or have never caught a sailfish, but they really want to just tick that off the bucket list. So it's sort of growing that we're getting a lot more people that are either doing it for a day within a week-long vacation, or they're new to a certain type of fishing, but we'll take them and we'll show them, and hopefully we'll accomplish their dream with them.
Right. And what's the tarpon? Go back to the tarpon again. What's the timing on the tarpon? I know there's a lot of variation there, but what are we hitting up there?
Tarpon in the river, it's from August until December. And then there's, for the ocean, it's basically August, September, October, because that's when we have low wind periods. Some of those areas you have to get out through a river mouth. I mean, there's not like a big inlet like in some places around the world. It's sort of a jungle river mouth that if you have waves, it can be a little bit sketchy and you wouldn't want to do it. So that's August, September, October. And then there's a small weather window in May as well.
Oh, in May. Okay. Yeah. So basically, yeah, the January, that time wouldn't be that great. January, February, March wouldn't be great.
I mean, if you can be flexible with your trip, there are definitely periods that 2 or 3 days in advance, you can make a wind call and say, okay, the wind's going to be good. Let's go. Or I'm sorry, it's going to be a little bit too dangerous. We have to change that part of the trip. So it's not something that we like to book in advance outside of those perfect periods for the ocean tarpon fishing. But it's definitely possible if you're flexible.
Gotcha. So again, going back to, you can just say, hey, you know, we want to come, we've got a week in February. It's like, we're going to come here in February. And then basically in that time, there's out of all these species, we could find at least a couple of species to hit up.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. Well, this has been good. We talked a little bit. I always love to leave it off on a couple of random ones. We mentioned coffee and, you know, before we actually mentioned the Ecuador thing. I think we were kind of off air when we talked about this, but we were mentioning, because I had an episode, we had a couple that we talked about Ecuador and didn't talk about the fact that sport fishing is illegal down there. And just talk about it, because that's interesting, because I want to make sure we cover this just so people know that you can't just go down to Ecuador and necessarily do the same thing you can do in Costa Rica. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, and this is just from talking to a couple different people down there, that basically it's illegal to sport fish. It's illegal to catch and release fish. And it's actually a rule that they're trying to pass now. I do a lot of work in Colombia as well, in a Peacock Bass River and also in the ocean. They're trying to do the same thing where sport fishing, catch and release fishing would become illegal based on, I guess, ethics. But I think in both destinations, they're looking at the pros and the cons, and a lot of those pros are, you know, local benefits and reasons to conserve different ecosystems and keep those fish populations healthy. So I think that even though there is a rule in state in Ecuador right now, and there's they're trying to pass the same type of law in Colombia, I think that those types of laws, hopefully they're going to go away and allow sport fishing and continue to benefit local people and those types of things. But
yep. And that's the you'd think that, well, we don't have time. Maybe we don't necessarily need to dig into all that on the politics, but let's talk about, just quickly as we take it out of here, the group, what you're doing for the local communities, right? And this is, when you were mentioning this, I was kind of thinking there's some other groups that are doing, there's at least one, I think, like the Indie Fly folks.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah,
yep.
Right. So that's a similar thing, I think, idea. But basically, talk about what you're doing there and with the local indigenous people. And as you talk about that, I also want to dig into a little bit to talk about how, if people can connect to the communities while they're there.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess to answer the second question first, connecting with the local communities, I mean, all the guides that I work with at almost all my destinations are locals. I've always found that the best way to really make sure that you have sort of that conservation in place is to find your local stewards, make them guides, make them believe that they're actually making a difference, and obviously put some money in their pocket. And in terms of the trainings and those types of things, I started doing trainings here in Costa Rica, and now I've started to do trainings in Colombia. We're looking at one next year in Bolivia, and then maybe one in Ecuador. That sort of is long term. But again, it's looking at local people. It's making sure that they're the ones that are most involved in their own backyard, benefiting from the resources that they have, but also active in conserving those resources and bringing outsiders in and having that cultural exchange. So I've actually had the IndieFly guys down here in,
oh, cool,
in Costa Rica. Yeah. They came down and sort of, we did like a meeting of the minds, and they came, yep, to the Jungle Tarpon Reserve. And so I've met them. They do wonderful work as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. It's Oliver White, I guess, was the kind of started that up. And I think Oliver, yep, is actually, yeah, I think he's like in Idaho now, getting back to his roots, right? I think he's back there now, but
yeah, I think he may have had a baby. And
oh, is that what it was? Yeah,
and, Yeah, exactly. But that's right. No, that's a wonderful time. I mean, I have two kids. And,
oh, cool.
And that early family time, there's nothing more special.
Yeah, that's right. How do you, when you're working with the local people, getting the, this is kind of a random tangent, but like the money in their pocket, how does that work with the money in their pocket, the amount of money, right? Like, is it similar to, you know, like, I know because I've worked with some folks up in the Philippines and it's always like, well, you know, a dollar goes a lot further there than it does in some other areas. How does that work with, you know, that area in Costa Rica with the local folks?
I mean, to give you an idea, money in their pocket, here in Costa Rica, it's actually relatively expensive, the cost of living.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, and I don't know if that's an influence of maybe being partially dollarized, even though we're not, but we have so many tourists here. We also have pretty high taxes. So it's definitely not like Colombia or Mexico where you get there and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, I just paid $3 for this incredible meal and a couple of beers and whatever else. So definitely the cost of living and, you know, the salaries, they're a little bit higher, but it's just making sure that you pay people fairly. And then obviously a lot of my guides here, they started with nothing and they'd show up with rubber boots and whatever else. And now, you know, they show up at work and they have Yeti backpacks and all the gear. And I've worked with a lot of those industry partners and making sure that people who are going to be out in the environment every day look the part as well. And they feel professional and they feel proud that I am a fly fishing guide. I know my craft and people can respect me.
That's it. Yeah. Shout out to Yeti. I actually had they were at the IFTD and they were giving out like, you know, coffee mugs, right, for business. You had to pay, you have to donate. I think it was like donating like whatever money to Bristol Bay. I think that was the thing they were working
on. Oh, that's
on.
Great. Yeah. That's
but yeah, another... the cups, again, to Yeti, you know, what you'd expect that, you know, it's not like they just gave you some coffee cup. I mean, the ones they're giving out are these coffee cups that pretty much keep your stuff warm all day long. I don't know. They got some tech, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, some of my clients, especially in the multi-day destinations, we have Yeti mugs for coffee in the morning. That's the frequent complaint where they get to the boat after half an hour of drinking their coffee and they still haven't been able to take a sip. And it's like, could you make your coffee a little bit less hot tomorrow?
That's right. Yeah, they're complaining it's working too good.
Yeah.
So this is good. Okay, well, I think we're good. The only other note I kind of had on here was the Tenkara. And that was kind of interesting because I know not everybody has done Tenkara, knows about it. And you're kind of, I think, connected or affiliated with some of that folks. Are you guys doing that? Is that like for the trout fishing or just if people are interested?
Yeah, for the trout fishing, a little bit for the machaca, but mainly for the trout. We work with a company called Zen Tenkara, which the head of that company, she's doing all kinds of sort of progressive things, I guess, in the Tenkara world, trying to catch bonefish and permit and all things that in the past have never been targeted with Tenkara. But for our rainbow trout fishery, I mean, it's just perfect. It's a small stream, pocket water. I mean, just like you hop from boulder to boulder. It's very, very easy with Tenkara. And then obviously with having people come that are maybe new to fly fishing, a Tenkara rod is just one of the easiest ways to learn and catch a fish right away.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to leave everything else till the next one. And we'll, you know, I guess just looking ahead here now, let's just think this is kind of, you're going to be like mid-July, kind of going into August. How does the rest of this year look for you? What do you guys, anything new or anything you want to give a heads up on?
I mean, we're starting our tarpon season. So we're going to be in the jungle from here until about Christmas time. It's an exciting time. It's a sort of a tiring time because it's also quite rainy. I mean, this is the rainy season, but it's a great time. I mean, we're just in that jungle environment chasing big tarpon. It's fun to be out there and be muddy and wet and just in the elements every day.
And it's still, what's it like temperature wise during the rainy season?
Oh, it's still hot. I mean, the beauty of Costa Rica is that even though you get rain every day or sun every day, I mean, it's one of those places that, you know, if you don't like the weather, wait a couple minutes. It's usually just a passing storm and then the sun comes out and dries everything off again.
Right. That's it. So perfect. All right. Well, this has been good, Tom. I'm glad we kind of touched the surface on a lot of these species and gave a broad stroke.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dave.
Yeah, we'll circle back around here at a later point, but we'll send everybody out to flyfishingcostarica.com. And what was your other site? We didn't dig into all your other locations, obviously, but what's are you still doing at the Release Travel?
Release Fly Travel. Yeah, that website's still up there. It's basically now becoming a little bit more of a company that's organized or that's focused on community-based projects, whether that be training or just pushing destinations that are they're truly sustainable, helping local people. So that's still there. That's releaseflytravel.com.
Yeah,
release. And then, yeah, the Costa Rica is, it's flyfishingcostarica.com, and it's the same on Instagram, flyfishingcostarica.
Okay. Perfect. All right. All right. Thanks for taking the time and digging in today, and we'll keep in touch with you, and we'll try to put together, we'll try to talk about that trip and maybe get some people heading your way.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Dave. And I guess we have to end this with what Costa Ricans say basically for everything. Thank you, please, hello, goodbye. So that's pura vida.
Oh, pura vida.
Pura vida.
I like that. I'm going to remember that. Pura vida. Okay, perfect. And that's in the local community, again, looking at the pura vida, I'm just thinking like por favor, right? Which is like, I'm probably totally throwing some random stuff in there. But what is the local kind of language out there?
Spanish.
It's all Spanish. So you don't have any indigenous?
Very small. Costa Rica, because it was in between bigger civilizations, has some indigenous populations, but not as big as certain parts of South America and a little bit further north in Guatemala and Mexico.
So that's good. So that's another reason why Costa Rica makes it pretty easy. I'm sure just like a lot of places, a lot of people speak English, but also Spanish is pretty common as well.
Spanish is pretty common. And I feel that almost everywhere you go in Costa Rica, tourism has been such a major economic driver for so long. Almost everyone speaks a little bit of English. And if they don't, Costa Ricans, you know, they're just amongst the friendliest people in the world. So
perfect.
They have no problem giving you a big smile and helping you out.
All right. All right, Tom. Well, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Dave. Take care.
So there it is. Another one in the books. wetflyswing.com/340. 340 will get you the links, show notes, and some bonus videos, maybe. Some bonus content over there. Check out the blog. Quick listener shout out before we get out of here. Adam Hortonberry. Adam reached out on Instagram. We chatted a little bit. He noted the Everglades episode that he'd love to see. So we're working on that. Adam, just want to say thanks for connecting there and appreciate your support. Definitely always good to connect with listeners of the show. If you want to connect with me, you can head over to the website right now. You can send me an email, dave@wetflyswing.com, or check in with me on the social media web. That's another good place to do it. We got this trivia night challenge going. This trivia is a way that we are kind of trying to give back, give some free fly tie-in swag. So if you're into some fly tie-in tools, some miscellaneous, Togans has you covered here. You can answer this week's trivia question at wetflyswing.com/trivia. That's trivia is the way you can do it. Just go there really quick, enter your email, and then we'll send out some stuff if you're chosen for a winner. And we're going to be doing more of those drawings coming up this year as we continue to get organized. Man, did you catch that episode we did with Henry Winkler a while back? This one is stretching out for me. It was an epic, kind of a little bit different, since we're dealing with somebody who's more of an actor, kind of movie star than anything else. But it was just hitting home as I was thinking today. I was watching, checking out a little bit of his past work, checking out the show Barry, which is pretty intense and good. So anyways, we are rolling out of here, and we've got some good stuff coming up here. I don't really have know exactly what the next episode, but I think we might have a fly tying episode coming up here, maybe with the Semperfly folks. So stay tuned for that. Again, follow us on social. That's the best way to get updated when we get the new episode, and the best way for you to get the content you need. I'd love to hear from you. Take time and stop right now if you can. Real easy. Dave@wetflyswing.com. Just send me an email. Let me know you've been listening here to the very end. I always love to hear that. And yeah, we're doing it. We're rolling along here. If you want to connect, do it now. Otherwise, I hope you have a good day. I hope you have a good evening or good morning, wherever you are. And looking forward to seeing you on the river or maybe online.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.